on a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House. And no matter where in the great state of Arizona you are listening, the one toll-free number to join the conversation, 888-767-4348. That's 888-ROSIE, the number 4, and then the letter U. Going through our January tree care calendar tips. Next on the list is frost protection. It is a warm winter.
Yes. You know, normally this time of year we're encouraging our customers to remember to protect their plants. And this year we've had a really warm winter and haven't had much occasion to, except for a couple of days, several weeks back, we had some really cold weather. It's been a very, very mild winter. Don't be fooled by that. We have often seen these very mild winters or even Januarys and Februarys that tend to warm up quickly. And then we'll have a March or an April cold snap, which is really tough on plants, by the way, because they've sort of been tricked into an early spring bloom, and they'll put on a start to bud and even put on a bloom or put on some new vegetative growth. Even some of our ash and elm and other deciduous trees will start to put on their new growth or new spring leaf growth, and then we'll have a late frost, and that juvenile growth gets damaged. And it's really it's a shame. Even some flowers, even some of our little bulbs will start to pop up, and then they get blasted with a late freeze. So hopefully that won't occur this year. One of the other drawbacks with a warm winter is, one, you sometimes don't have the chill hour requirements met in some of your fruit-bearing trees, like your stone fruits, that require a certain number of chill hours. If we have a very mild winter and not enough of those chill hours, which are below 40 degrees, we'll sometimes not have a very good fruit-producing year. In fact, sometimes your fruit trees simply won't put on fruit because we don't have that chill hour requirement met. The other concern is you get that early bud break, and it will even cause less fruit or less well-developed fruit because the trees haven't had long enough time to harden over the winter, so they're not as productive. So we'll have sometimes this early bud break will be there, and they'll produce the flowers which produce the fruit, but it'll be a very weak harvest. So this is a little bit of a tricky situation, insufficient chill hours or that early bud break producing less fruit. Another concern with a mild winter is that there's the risk of higher insect populations in the spring. We often see that these insects that require a really hard freeze to kill off the next generation, the eggs in the pupa stage of some of these insects, if they overwinter and get into another year, the populations can be doubled or tripled. So be on the lookout if we've had a mild winter for those insect populations, which unfortunately will be pretty heavy in the spring. I'm thinking caterpillars. You know, sometimes the caterpillars that have been getting into our Tacomas, our yellow bells and orange jubilee, our bougainvillea, they could be really, really bad. Some of our grape leaf skeletonizers and some of our mites and other aphids and things could be some heavy populations this year.
How do you combat those? I mean, is it chemical application? You had talked earlier about doing construction barriers. Do you put like a chicken wire and net it off and put a bunch of birds in there to chew them down?
Well, you know, nature has a way of sorting these things out. That when you do have those higher insect populations, of course, you know, the predators on those insects, if they have natural predators like the birds and other insects, will have a really good year. The birds will go crazy, and they eventually will reduce those populations. In Arizona, because of our high temperature extremes, sometimes we have to wait until we start getting our temperatures above 100 degrees, where the hot temperatures will slow down that life cycle and sometimes eliminate the pests. So But, you know, we ascribe to what's called the integrated pest management philosophy, which is we have all sorts of methods of controlling pests. One is patience and just simply waiting for nature to take its course. That's really the most effective long-term solution to many of our pests, is to let them run their natural course. Rather than getting out the big guns and bringing in some heavy chemicals to try to attack these things. Secondly, there are some biologicals and other means of that are less toxic to the environment, which should be our first choice if we really feel like we need to get some control on some insects in our yard. There are other less toxic means of doing that. And lastly, we kind of hold in reserve some chemicals that might have been proven effective in dealing with insects at epidemic populations that are starting to really destroy our landscapes. Then sometimes we have to, you know, step in with the chemical intervention and try to bring an end to the this heavy infestation. But yeah, we try to start with the least toxic method and then move forward from that. And sometimes, like, by the time we've figured out what we're doing, by the time we've seen the symptoms, sometimes even the life cycle of the pest has progressed so far that we're almost at the end of the cycle when we started to see the adults have moved from the pupa stage into their adult feeding stage. And sometimes they've even moved beyond where it's even reasonable to start trying to chemically control them. When we started to see the leaf drop and the other symptoms, well, maybe the damage has already been done and the insect has moved on. And we really recommend people to be patient and not to just start looking for a chemical solution right out of the gate.
In addition to our talking tree points for January, this is the time for olive spray. We took a call earlier from a listener in Tucson that said she heard you mention something that you could also apply to mesquites. Let's talk about that, the prevention of that.
Yeah,
blossom.
If you have some of the old world olive trees that are producing olives and you don't want them to be dumping that fruit, this is the time to be calling to get on the schedule to get your olive trees sprayed. So we've got a couple of months window for applying those chemicals. If you also are planning to do some olive spraying and your trees are older and pretty dense with a foliage, you might want to consider a light thinning of the foliage just so you get better spray coverage. So we recommend pruning your olive trees lightly now prior to the spraying. Or just make sure you get on the calendar to get that spraying done before that window of opportunity comes. Because what the spray does is these are chemicals that encourage the trees to drop their fruit before it matures. So they have to be sprayed when they're in their bloom cycle. And then they abort the fruit and they drop those small fruits before they get larger. And you can't do that once the fruit's developed on the stem. You can't treat them. Yes, there are some chemicals as well, some that are hormone based, which can be sprayed on mesquites and other legumes to minimize their pod production. This has been a wonderful. We've seen some really good results from our recent treatments of mesquite trees. If you're faced with that dubious task of having to rake up bags and bags and bags and bags of mesquite pods and you don't want to do that, consider applying a treatment that would minimize that fruit production. And you can contact Sarah through our office. If you want to ask about some of your seed-producing fruits, we can only apply some of these products to a tree for which it's labeled. And you need to talk with Sarah and see if your specific trees that you'd like to not to be picking up the seed pods after by just contacting us at itreeservice.com and put in a request, email or phone in during business hours and let us know what you'd like to try to help you with.
So that's not a do-it-yourself project, John. That spray is not available to...
There are some over-the-counter spray products that are available. You can contact your local nursery and ask about them. If you've got some larger trees, you might find it's difficult to spray properly. There has to be some protection of surrounding plants, so you want to be careful that you're not overspraying. I made the mistake of trying it once many years ago and overspraying one of my trees. It was a fig tree, and it completely defoliated, almost killed the tree.
Oops.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I didn't realize, you know, that the overspray would, you know, affect trees nearby. So,
Need to be careful, we need to be really careful.
Well, I was going to say, I defer to Sarah, our plant health care director. She's wonderful, and she can give you more specific information on what products are available and how we can help you in that regard.
Okay, great. And I just came in and showed John a picture that came in by text. Texting is a great way, or emailing us info@rosieonthehouse.com if you have something you want us to see, because sometimes things are really hard to explain. So this is a picture of a, and that's actually a pomegranate tree, John. And
okay.
And it's bare right now, and it has a great big old hunk of something. And when you looked on that, you called it a...
fasciation.
Yeah, so it's like kind of like a deformity or a growth. So
yeah, there's sometimes some genetic malformation of some of the branches, and they produce what's called a fasciation. And they're natural. We're not sure what causes them, but they occur spontaneously on all sorts of trees and shrubs and flowers. And that's what I think you're looking at there in that photo you showed me. But yeah, that's a great idea to send in any photos of things you have in your yard. It's a means by which we do a lot of communication through our office with customers able to send us information by text or email. And it's nice to kind of have a do a diagnosis long distance. And it's a fast way to do it. So if you have any photographs of some things you're looking at in your yard and want some quick questions, turnaround answers, we're happy to take a look at those and help you find some answers.
One last question on that particular fasciitis.
Fasciation.
Fasciation. Does she just leave it alone? Does she cut it out? Or what would you do with that? It's ugly.
You know, we sometimes have these fasciations in pine trees and others where it actually is a huge accumulation of vegetative growth, and we sometimes take them out.
Okay.
They're not hurting the tree necessarily. In fact, when witch's broom occurs in Palo Verde trees, we just leave it in, because even though it looks a little bit odd because it's a heavy accumulation of foliage, it's still photosynthesizing and actually contributing to the overall health of the tree. So you don't necessarily have to take them out, but if it's kind of destroying the overall aesthetic appeal of the plant, you might want to consider clipping some of that out. Sure.
Thank you.